We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
On the Cowboys Sports Network from Learfield, welcome to the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series. Brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. Now, here's the voice of the Cowboys, Dave Hunziker.
Welcome to another edition of the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. Today, we sit down with head basketball coach Mike Moynton. Before that starts, though, a word about Strad CL Plus. If you like Double Stop CL Plus, you'll be even more satisfied with its successor, Strad CL Plus. Strad CL Plus is closely related to Double Stop CL Plus, but it starts faster, grows faster, and finishes a few days earlier with a higher yield potential. And Strad CL Plus is an elite performer that sets the highest standards for yield, test weight, tenacity, and baking quality. Check out Strad CL Plus by logging on to OKGenetics.com. Coming up, we start our conversation with OSU head men's basketball coach Mike Moynton. This is the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield.
It's the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by our friends at Oklahoma Genetics. And a real treat for you today as we're joined by Cowboy basketball coach Mike Moynton. It's good to catch up.
Good morning. It's been a busy summer so far, and we're about halfway done already. It feels like it's going fast, but a lot's happened.
Yeah, you've had a lot going on in a lot of different areas.
Yeah. You know, obviously, personally, my own children are busy with camps and traveling, and right now up in Michigan visiting grandparents with my wife. And you know, obviously, from a professional standpoint, been a lot dealing with the program, but also with some USA basketball stuff here in the last month or so. It's been quite a jam-packed summer so far.
Yeah, tell us about the USA basketball experience. What's that been like?
It's been phenomenal. I feel very fortunate to be a part of that program. You know, obviously, you know, this kind of goes back to a changing in philosophy by USA basketball after the 2004 Olympics, where we didn't fare so well. They decided to make it more of a consistent, committed program from both players and coaches. And obviously, Jerry Colangelo and Coach Krzyzewski were the kind of leading people on that. Greg Popovich has been involved, Steve Kerr, and that's on a senior national team. On the junior national level, obviously, guys like Jay Wright and Bill Self and, you know, even John Calipari here recently were a part of coaching the 18U team that I was able to coach here back in June that won a gold medal over in Mexico. So it was a lot of fun, and certainly something I look forward to building on and certainly bringing some of that stuff back here to Stillwater.
How is that perhaps different than just being a regular, just coaching on a collegiate level? How's that national team different? What's that like?
Yeah, it's different in every way. I mean, there are very, very few similarities, to be perfectly honest. So the process of how you get the team, right? You invite sometimes between 25 and 50 of the best kids at a certain age group. And it's truly by year of birth, so you can't, you know, fudge or anything like that. And so these guys were all guys that would turn 18 in this calendar year, no older than. And so it was a phenomenal process to go through the tryouts and then make a team. So we went from, we had 27, we cut to 12, which wasn't easy because you got, you know, 15 really good players that you're sending home that eventually you either coach against or you'll see playing in the NBA at some point and kind of kick yourself over. And then we practice for 4 or 5 days before we went over to Tijuana and competed in the FIBA Americas Championships and were fortunate to win a gold medal in that event.
Going through that as a coach, is there anything you learn about the process of evaluating talent, maybe even pondering recruiting philosophy? Do you gain anything from that? Of course, you've been doing this forever, but can you gain anything from that particular experience?
Absolutely. Very, very streamlined process. There's a specific order, if you will, of how you get to the 12, right, and what you need to be successful in the event, right? It's very process and mission-oriented. Mm-hmm. So you don't necessarily take the 12 best guys, the 12 best people from camp, don't make the team. Certainly, you have to have a point guard. You have to have some rebounders. You have to have some shooters. You have to have guys who can protect the rim. And so you're just kind of going through that process with guys like Matt Painter and Jamie Dixon and Tommy Lloyd and Rob Lanier, and listening to their perspective on how to put a team together has certainly helped the way I think about it as well. And like I said, it's something I've talked to my staff about. As we move forward, you'll see us try to implement some of those things into our own recruiting philosophies.
It's interesting. Basketball is so different than football that way. Football coaches certainly have chances to get together at conference meetings, but that's about it. Whereas because of the international opportunities, the college coaches, there's a real camaraderie. And while you compete against each other, I don't know to what extent there's an exchange of ideas, but even unintentionally, there's an exchange of ideas because everybody has their own philosophy about how these things should go and what they see in players. So it's a very interesting dynamic, it seems.
But you also find out rather quickly how interconnected we all are.
Yeah.
So Tad Boyle's the head coach of the U18 teams. I was his assistant along with Leon Rice from Boise State. Tad and Leon had a connection through Mark Few and some other guys on the West Coast. Well, Tad Boyle played for Coach Brown at Kansas.
There you go.
A North Carolina Coach Smith disciple.
Yeah.
I played for Coach Fogler, a North Carolina Coach Smith disciple. So from a basketball philosophical standpoint, we had a lot of similar thoughts and ideas about how the game should be played, about what type of players you need to be successful. And then you add a guy like Coach Rice, who brings a perspective from, you know, Mark Futree, which, you know, come Dan Monson and now Tommy Lloyd and guys who've had success, you know, with the international game, with international players, and just to mesh it all and to feel like I've learned a lot from those guys, and I'll certainly continue to lean on them moving forward.
As you ponder those interactions, how often do you find yourself sort of having the aha moment that, you know what, at the end of the day, here's another guy that's connected to whomever, Mark Few, whoever, but at the end of the day, it's Mr. Iba. I mean, how often do you just stop and think, you know what, at the end of the day, we're back to Mr. Iba again, and you meet somebody else, you interact with them, it's like, whoop, we're back to Mr. Iba again. How often does that happen? On probably a pretty regular basis. At some point, it comes back to our guy.
It comes back to our guy, and a lot of times, it comes back to his building.
It comes
back to this building, and you would be amazed at how many times I'm either in a setting like that or just on the road recruiting and hear people talk about their experiences at some time in their lives in Gallagher Arena. I was sitting with Hollis Price, who I'm sure is a name that many people around here know well, at an AU event this weekend. And we were just kind of shooting small talk in between games as teams were warming up. We're watching a team from Dallas. They're recruiting a kid in Texas, and we are as well. So, you know, we just got to talking about the best places we've ever played. And without hesitation, he still talks about how he played in both old Gallagher and
yes, he did.
The renovated building. I didn't know this. You know, obviously, I don't think about it. And he says he's never been in a building as intimidating as this one.
Really?
And this is obviously a guy from a rival school of ours who had some success against our program.
Yeah, he was on the team that beat Oklahoma State in the final game of the old Gallagher.
Absolutely. And we were sitting in Old Kemp Arena, which is now Hy-Vee.
Oh, my gosh. There's another one.
And talking about the experiences that he had in the Big 12, Big 8 tournament. And obviously, Coach Boyle and I had some of those same conversations because he played in this building. And he played in Old Kemper. And so just on and on, the ties to Coach Iba, but also the ties to Gallagher-Iba Arena and the Big 12 basketball scene is phenomenal.
It seems to me that just about no matter who you run into, and I'm sure this is true with you coaching-wise and with coaches or even former players, that the classic venues like Gallagher-Iba and all the history that's there, that just never gets old. And there's – I feel it when I go into other buildings, but there's a feeling probably for people that come in here because basketball people respect the game so much and its history. It makes it pretty unique, even for those who come in here. We don't think of it that way. And they, you know, I'm sure in the fans' minds, like, oh, this place is just a big pain in the neck to play in. That's not really true. It probably fires them up because they look at this as the classic venue that it is.
Absolutely. And I think people have such an appreciation for what this building represents. The respect of the game that our fans have, that our fans enjoy the game being played the right way, which means playing as hard as you can, hustling after every loose ball, fighting and scrapping on defense, and obviously coming down to the wire, seeing who's going to be able to pull it out. So I think people have an appreciation for the building, but they also have a great appreciation for our fans' love of basketball.
Yeah, it's so neat. And we'll kind of wrap this up on this thought. It's so neat. I have to admit, and I said this in an interview I did recently, and I'm sure you get to do this a lot. I like to walk into the place when it's just empty, like early in the morning or late at night when I know no one's in there, and just really just sit or stand in there and just think about all the players, all the teams, all the coaches who have been in this building on this floor, which is the original floor. If you're any kind of basketball person, I love to do that, and I've done it for 20 years, and it's never got old. I don't think it ever will. There's something very powerful about that, I think.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. As you know, we go to the opposing team's arena the night before we play them just about every trip we take.
Sure.
And I'm always the first off the bus the night before, and just when I walk into the building, it's something that I try to take in the environment. And I know so many coaches that come by here, and just they're in awe looking around at the national championship banners and thinking about the coaches who coached on that floor, the players who played meaningful, tough, competitive games on that floor. And almost everybody who's played here has a memory of a great moment in their life. And, you know, I tell people all the time, my first real experience watching a game and being drawn into the atmosphere was the Kevin Durant triple overtime game where Byron Nyquist hits the half-court shot over the shoulders and they win and Mario Bogan goes crazy. And, you know, everybody has a story like that. And that's what makes this place, Oklahoma State itself, special. But our basketball program, one of the more well-respected programs in the entire country.
And joining us now is Dr. Andrea Yilling, who is Assistant Professor of Environmental Soil Chemistry in the Department of Plant and Soil Sciences at Oklahoma State University. And let's talk regenerative agriculture, which is your specialty. If you would, just sort of outline the basic principles of regenerative ag.
So there actually isn't one set definition, so it's a bit hard to answer. But in general, regenerative agriculture is all about, on the one hand, growing crops so that they're productive and yielding, while also maintaining healthy soil and supporting biodiversity and also supporting processes like carbon capture, so kind of pulling CO2 from the air into the soil as a way to hopefully fight climate change is the idea. So all about healthy, happy soils.
Very good. What's really driving the adoption of regenerative agriculture? You mentioned climate change, but it seems like there are other dynamics at play as well.
Yeah, so definitely the kind of just general recognition that climate change is an increasing threat. But also, you know, there's just a lot of opportunity in agricultural systems to capture carbon and to build more carbon in the soil. And that has a lot of benefits beyond climate change. That also kind of supports other services that a soil provides, like keeps our waterways healthy that are nearby, near those agricultural fields. There's also, just among consumers, I think, just increasing interest in buying food that is grown in kind of a more environmentally responsible way. So this kind of goes beyond the organic kind of principle in supporting a healthy environment.
That's Dr. Andrea Yilling, who's Assistant Professor of Environmental Soil Chemistry in the Department of Plant and Soil Sciences at Oklahoma State University. More to come on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield.
It's a Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by our friends at Oklahoma Genetics and catching up with Cowboy Head Coach Mike Boynton. Well, you've had some summer workouts. That's allowed now. So how's that going?
It's going well. It's, again, we talked about this in the segment prior. The process has evolved in terms of what you do this time of year, what you know about your team this time of year. There was a time when I first took, for instance, when I became head coach for the first time, we didn't have any new players on that team except for one. We had a kid named Zach Dawson who was the only freshman that year that wound up not making it. But Everyone else was returning from the previous year's team. And so my first year of summer workouts, we were able to jump right in and get right into team philosophy, style of play, and it wound up working out because guys emerged as leaders. I'll never forget Mitchell Solomon's presence in our locker room that whole year. Cam McGriff, Lindy Waters, Thomas Izago, those guys were sophomores and learning what leadership looked like, not really able to do it yet. Well, now, fast forward, it's 5 years later, it's a totally different atmosphere. We've got four new guys, only one of which played in high school last year.
Yeah.
You know, and the rest of these guys are new, but not new to college basketball. They're new to us. They're new to our style. They're new to Stillwater. And so it's been a different approach in terms of just getting to know them on an individual and personal basis and then trying to figure out what their individual talents are as it relates to the guys who we have returning who've been in our program for at least a year now.
So walk us through your new guys individually and sort of what so far you feel like they bring to the table.
Yeah, I'll start with the freshman, the lone freshman at this point, Keon Williams, a really, really high energy, kind of a jack of all trades, if you will. I mean, he will remind people of ice. He shoots it from the perimeter quite a bit better. But in terms of his defensive and physical presence, he has that body type. He plays really, really hard. He loves the competition of the game. But right now, his head's spinning a little bit. You know, he's been here for 5 weeks now, and it's the first time that he's really been grinded through a process that every day you show up and there's something to do. And if you're not careful and you're not organized, you can miss something, right? And then on the court, things aren't happening quick enough yet for him. Right. So the game has to slow down. He's got to figure out how to make an impact, probably on the defensive side of basketball from an energy standpoint, rebounding. And then the offensive stuff will come along as he gets to learn and watch film and be around his teammates a little bit more. But we're really excited about his future. We think his competitive energy is going to give him an opportunity to get on the floor some this year. And then as we move forward, he'll certainly be somebody that we can count on to continue to build what we hope to be a great foundation from young people.
And then you have the transfers.
Yeah, quite a few of them. I'll start with John Michael Wright, the transfer from High Point. Obviously comes from a very well-coached system at High Point, playing for Coach Tubby Smith. And Coach Smith raved about this young man as I talked to him about, you know, bringing him to our program, just about the character and the care that he has for, A, doing things the right way. For wanting to win and for wanting to be a part of the leadership in your culture, not necessarily having to do it the way he did it at High Point, where he averaged 18 points a game and was a first-team all-conference guy for multiple years, but doing whatever it takes. There it was scoring. Here it may be more facilitating and being a scorer at times, and then obviously having a vocal presence and being able to make the game easier for his team.
So he can play the point.
He certainly can play the point. He'll play a lot of point for us. He'll be a guy that we rely on to get us an offense, to get guys like Bryce Thompson shots, to get guys like Musa Cisse shots. And then he's shown the ability to be able to score himself. He's a career 36% three-point shooter, which is really, really good for us. And it's something that we knew we needed going into the offseason was addressing a three-point shot.
So, and you mentioned this earlier, but since he played for Tubby Smith, and of course, Tubby did many, many things. He won a national championship, but people forget most of the roster that Chris Beard took to a high level at Texas Tech was a foundation he very intentionally put in place with a very precise recruiting approach that worked beautifully. He's had a whole bunch of really good players. But I'm sure there was comfort in knowing it's like, hey, this guy was coached by Tubby. I know sort of how Tubby has approached building programs and types of players he takes. So did that play a role in that?
Absolutely.
Sure it did,
and Coach Beard will tell you yourself, if you were to ask him, that a lot of his early success at Tech was because he had a great foundation to build on. He had high character kids, Keenan Evans and Norrence Odiasse, guys who either were all Big 12 guys or tremendous role players. Norrence Odiasse almost helped him win a national championship.
Yeah.
He was recruited by Tubby Smith. And so there's no doubt when you talk to a guy like Coach Smith about the character, you can take it to the bank that that's what you're going to get from a young man. He's eager to get out there and prove that he can affect winning at the highest level of college basketball. And we're certainly thankful for him to be here. One of the best things about him is he's got 2 years of eligibility left. And so we'll have some continuity as we move forward with him.
What's Caleb Asbury bring to the table?
Caleb Asbury brings shot making. And he's also a guy, when you talk about what we were trying to identify as guys who heard what winning things were about. Right. And so when I talk about Coach Smith, when you look at a guy like Caleb Asbury, think about the coaches he played for. He played for Billy Gillespie. Now, you can say what you want about
at
him
Ranger
off
Kyle.
The
yep.
court,
yep.
but he is a heck of a basketball coach.
Well, there's no doubt about
and
that.
And still have a success at Tarleton State now. But that was his first experience at college at the college level was playing for him. And then he played for Danny Casper, another really, really successful defensive-minded coach at Texas State before playing for the two-time now Coach of the Year at Texas State. And Terrence Johnson, Coach TJ down there, a good friend of mine. But he can really, really score. He has great understanding of how to move the ball, how to move without the ball. And then defensively, he's got a great foundation that we can build on. We lose a little bit of length at that position with him, but we gain a lot of shot-making ability and basketball IQ with Caleb Asbury.
And from Louisiana Monroe is Russell Harrison. And there again, Keith Richard's a name people may not know, but he was at Louisiana Tech.
Absolutely.
He's coached forever. He's won a lot of games. I mean, so he's been in a very experienced coach hands for a long time, or at least during his tenure at Monroe.
Really all his life. You know, he's been well coached. He grew up in Lubbock, so he'll be excited, you know, to get a chance to compete against them. I have to say, we are working through another additional year of eligibility situation with him.
Okay.
He's an older kid. He's been around the block. He's had some issues that we're trying to sort through now, but from a basketball standpoint, he brings shot-making ability at the four position. And a stretch four in our league is an invaluable commodity. And so I expect him to really, really have an impact once we get the other stuff sorted out from day one in terms of being able to get on the court, understand how to space the floor, how to, again, create situations where teams can't double-team a Bryce Thompson or sag in the lane against the big guys that we have returning who are all pretty capable scorers inside. And so, again, another guy who's a high 30% three-point shooter that can stretch the floor and space the floor and be a shot-maker for us.
So now into the philosophical stuff, so to speak. You know, we're now in the transfer portal world. We're in the NIL world. And one thing I've thought about is, obviously, you have multiple transfers and just one freshman. I mean, how is it impacting how you're going to recruit, how you're going to evaluate? What's that look like now?
Well, I'll say the thing that will have the most impact on, perfectly honest, are middle tier but really talented high school players. So the top tier players, the top 50 players in college, in high school, they won't really have that much effect on them. But really, once you get past probably even higher than that, 25 guys between like 26 and 326, you can probably make an argument for any of them. Zach Edey, for example, was, I think, 335th in the country coming out of high school 3 years ago. I think he's done okay.
Yeah, you know? I'd say so.
Guys like Damian Lillard and Steph Curry, yep. under-recruited guys. Those guys would have a hard time being recruited now. As crazy as that sounds. I mean, two guys going to be multiple max contract guys in the NBA, and Damian Lillard and Steph Curry. But at the same time, there's opportunity, right, for other guys to emerge. And so you just got to probably take a more strategic approach with recruiting high school kids, be more selective of the guys that you do decide to commit offers to and try to bring to campus, because you're always probably, for the time being, going to be in the market in the spring for you know, college transfers, grad transfers, and such.
Yeah, and I think part of that, too, is that you know, now we're getting into the other issue, which is sort of the payment issue. But one thing that comes to mind is, you know, even, you know, with the Alston money that Oklahoma State now is putting into play, which is, you know, just under $6,000 a year to all scholarship athletes that basically take care of their business, just to, for lack of a better description. So now when you think about cost of attendance and Alston money per diem and the things that go with it, here you're looking at $16,000, $17,000, maybe even up to the neighborhood of $20,000 a year. And so I don't know if this is real or not, but I'm curious. Do you have to really be careful who you take? Because if they're a guy that doesn't work out, in the old days, they'd just take off and go to a lower mid-major because they wanted to play.
Sure.
Well, now they're looking up at giving up a lot of money.
Sure.
If they leave, because if they go to Radford, no offense, I'll use my old school as an example because people know I still love that place. They're not getting that money.
Right.
Is that a real thing, or are players, you know, still eager to play and prove themselves that doesn't come into play? I mean, that has me curious. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, well, first I want to commend our administration for being out in the forefront of being able to provide the Alston funds to our student-athletes, because not all schools are doing it. And so it's certainly an advantage in that regard to be at Oklahoma State, because we are committed to honoring that for all of our scholarship student-athletes. And like you said, it's roughly $6,000 a year for all scholarship athletes. And, you know, it's money for them to kind of take a burden. You know, and some of them they needed to send back home, to be perfectly honest. These kids sometimes come from difficult backgrounds.
Yes.
But you do, on the other hand, have to be careful that it doesn't become about that. It's the thing that I also was concerned about with NIL when it first came on board last year, that A, kids would all of a sudden be motivated by that, and B, that they wouldn't understand that there's different consequences that come with accepting money to do what you do in terms of public scrutiny and the like. So we certainly want to be careful that we don't recruit kids who just want to be here because we provide great financial resources, although that's a part of it. We want them to appreciate the educational experience. We want them to appreciate the basketball development piece. We want them to appreciate the connectivity that they'll have with a network of Oklahoma State alums and graduates. And we want them to be prepared when they leave here to stand on their own and be accounted for in their communities and in their families.
So how do you feel about NIL, just in general?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those deals. I've said this publicly, so I'm not, you know, worried about saying it here.
Right, right.
You know, NIL is a little bit of a farce. I don't know why we even call it NIL. It's, you know, NIL is what LeBron James does. All right? He's really, really good at something, and somebody says, hey, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to connect my company with your name, and we could make a deal. Mm-hmm. We both mutually benefit. Well, you know, we don't have.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We need real rules now, and so we've kind of gotten out of the barn without a whole lot of direction. So we're kind of manufacturing things along the way so that kids understand that they have value. We just don't know how to calculated right now.
Right.
But we are going to try to help them along the way. I think eventually it'll sort itself out. You hear some ridiculous things out in the media. You don't know what is true and what's not. But we do know here we're trying to do everything we can so our kids know that we want to provide the most opportunities possible. And we want to keep the main thing. What we tell them in our program is I've never seen a guy really good at basketball not have opportunities moving forward in his life. So the best thing you can do is become a really good basketball player and help your team win.
Yeah, and the chips will fall where they may.
Absolutely.
Back with more in a moment. It's the Cowboys Summer Series from Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield. It's a Cowboys Summer Series with OSU head basketball coach Mike Boynton. It's brought to you by our friends at Oklahoma Genetics, and we've kind of covered a little bit of NIL and what you have as far as newcomers to this team. We'll get into some of the returning players as well as we progress. But, now we have conference realignment. You hear about everything from a football standpoint, but the dynamic for basketball, it seems, would be totally different. And it is different, right?
Yeah. The basketball piece in general is different. And I don't think many people realize this until these conversations have started to come up recently. Football's kind of always, at least in the last probably 15 years, kind of been its own entity. They're not as connected to the NCAA.
Right.
As basketball and the rest of the sports, baseball, so on and so forth. The bowls, the college football playoff, are separate from the NCAA. So there's a direct impact to the conferences and the teams that participate in those events. But none of that funding goes back to Indianapolis.
Right, right.
Some of that funding flows through the departments and through coaches and bonuses or whatever, and probably now NIL, but not necessarily through the NCAA. Well, on the basketball side, everything flows through the NCAA.
Right.
Mainly the NCAA tournament. And so we're more connected to what happens there unless there's some new situation where there's a new leadership or a new structure that comes around to try to put us in a different kind of space.
It scares me when you read the possibility that if the NCAA goes away, so does basically the NCAA tournament as we know it. Does it scare you?
I don't know if it scares me that the part – it's not going away. All right? There's too much of an appetite. There's too much of a desire for that to keep going. Now, how we continue is the scary part, because my biggest fear is we don't have leadership.
I got you.
That's my biggest fear. So who's ultimately going to step up and say, I'd like to be a part of this leadership cohort, if you will, and try to figure out how to move this thing forward and continue this great thing that we've had for so long? Because it is the best thing that our sport does. Which is why last year was so devastating, not being able to participate.
Yeah.
Because it just takes the wind out of your sails before you even get started. And so there's no doubt in my mind the tournament will continue. It'll look a little bit different. But what we need is we need real leadership. We need a commissioner for college basketball. We need a commissioner for college football. And we need those two leadership positions to guide us moving forward in the next 15, 20, 25 years so that we can keep – the purity of our game, we can keep our fans engaged, because I would assume that it may be happening in more places than not, that NIL and all this money flowing around making college athletics so similarly close to professional athletics may be turning off our fans.
Oh, sure. And that's part of this. It's interesting. I've made this point with college football is that it seems like we have two versions of it now. One that's made for television and one that's made for the fans. And they're not the same. And if we don't watch it, if we really mess up the NCAA tournament, we may go down that same path.
Sure.
That cannot have a bright long-term future, I don't think.
Yeah, and I thought about this just over the last couple of weeks, especially with the Southern Cal and UCLA deal, going into Big Ten. And I never imagined there would be a situation. It actually confused me when Syracuse was no longer in the Big East.
Yeah.
And when Rutgers was all of a sudden a part of the Big Ten. And I was thinking to myself, that doesn't even make sense. Well, now UCLA and Rutgers are in the same conference.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a trip that the Southern Cal kids take to Madison, Wisconsin for a midweek conference game here soon.
Yeah.
And if any of the rumors are true, we could be the first conference to cover all four time zones.
How about that?
And so you're going to be going from the West Coast to the East Coast. Game. I mean, just the thought of just how far away we've gotten to the regionality of it. And so my point was, the fans are going to be turned off because they're no longer in their homes talking about a Missouri versus Kansas game. And the people have both, you know, his wife went to school there, or his cousin went to school there, and so they're at the family picnic talking about it. Well, how many people have people in their families who both went to UCLA and Rutgers?
They don't even know anybody that went to school there. So, they're not even sure where it is. I mean, they probably don't even know where Rutgers is located. I mean, in Cahokia, Missouri, they don't know where it's at.
You're going to lose some of those, that banter and some of what makes college athletics so special.
You know what it becomes, Coach? You stop and think about it. Everybody's existence becomes like West Virginia's.
Sure.
In that, they don't get to play Pitt anymore.
Sure.
They don't get to play Syracuse anymore. They just got back to playing Virginia Tech. And their fans have supported them, but it's been really hard. And all those rivalries that they have so coveted,
sure,
and enjoyed are just gone. So it's like, yeah, it's here and it's okay.
Yeah, think about who, and again, as a Big 12 person, I love our conference. It's the best basketball conference in the country. But who would West Virginia consider a rival in the conference?
There isn't anybody.
You know, and so who do their fans look forward to seeing play? Obviously, I'm sure they look forward to seeing Kansas come in there every year because of the pride and tradition of that program. But, you know, not having, you know, Virginia or, you know, Syracuse or Maryland or anybody that maybe some other people and their families went to one of those schools,
yeah,
close by, and they can sit around and have dueling hats and have crazy pranks at work on Monday after a football game. I mean, it's insane.
Well, and the reality is we could be living with that with Oklahoma, which a few years down the line, we'll cross that bridge when we get to it. That's so we may be living in that same world, sadly. Back to the NCAA tournament. You coached at Wofford. You coached a big part of your growth as a coach, and where you are today is tied back to Stephen F. Austin.
Sure, sure.
Low majors.
Yes.
In you know, you hear all this talk about the NCAA tournament and the possibility that, hey, the low majors, they may not be a part of what happens moving forward.
Yeah,
how do you feel about that?
That's really sad. The NCAA tournament is two things. It's a two-part deal. It's Stephen F. Austin beating VCU or West Virginia. It's St. Peter's beating Kentucky. I mean, and then it's Kansas and North Carolina in a national championship game.
In the same event.
In the same event. That's what makes it awesome. You don't get those things in football already. We already don't get any of that in football.
Oh, it's been basically rooted out.
You know, it used to be cool, right? It was a talk for many years. Appalachian State beating Michigan. How big a deal is that?
It was awesome.
You know, but now basketball may be going the same route, unfortunately. And those programs financially suffer from an exposure standpoint of suffer. The universities by, you know, connectivity will suffer. And, you know, I really feel bad for the kids, but who I feel bad for are the coaches at that level. Because here's what's going to continue to happen. They're going to still play basketball at those places. They're going to have a different kind of event. And coaches at this level will watch their event. They'll see good players. And they'll say, hey, you can't play in the tournament against
us. And they'll poach them.
And those kids will be playing in the power whatever, the power 2, 4, 10.
And it's already happening now. It's
Absolutely.
Just going to get worse.
Yeah.
You know, I know in my wife's case, she knew when St. Peter's was playing and who they were playing.
Yep.
It was the only school she cared about.
Sure.
Because everybody was, you know, she's like, you know, the average person who cares about basketball, cares about her team, but then outside of that, probably very, very casual. Oh, she knew who they were playing.
Sure.
And knew when they were playing.
And if you've been there, when you're in that building and that team that no one really knows anything about starts beating on the power team.
It's nothing like it.
The feeling in that building. I'll never forget the overwhelming feeling of these people don't have any idea where Stephen. We were in Brooklyn, New York, playing West Virginia when we beat them in 2016. there was probably 12 people in that building, and half of them were my family members who even knew what Stephen F. Austin was. There are times you go out on the road, and people are like, hey, are you guys Division I? No, they don't know.
They don't
know. But all of a sudden, they're pulling for you. And every shot you make, and every steal you get, every shot you block, every time the other team turns it over or misses a free throw, it's a swell of it. And you watch it every year. And for that to go away would be really, really sad.
Yeah, because when you've been at those schools and you're looked down upon, I mean, you really are.
Sure.
You're like, ah, that place is a joke. Yeah. May not be. I mean, oh, there's nothing like it.
Yeah, we had
nothing like it.
We had Thomas Walkup for 3 years. He's still playing pro, winning championships overseas.
Yeah.
And I don't know, right? If he can't play in that NCAA tournament, he's not staying at Stephen F. Austin.
No, he's not. It's, gosh, it's just, ooh, it's frightening to think about. Back with more in a moment. It's the Cowboys Summer Series from Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield. Back with Coach Boynton on the Cowboys Summer Series brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics. You know, we talked about the newcomers, but here's the thing about the returning guys. Their hunger, because now the opportunity to get back in the NCAA tournament is there. I would guess it's absolute 110 on the scale of 1 to 100. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, they're pretty motivated right now, and it's good to see because they have a different, more mature approach, and they have a different idea of what's at stake because they know what they couldn't do last year. Mm-hmm. And it was all that anybody ever talked about, and so it's also the thing that I feel most motivated for this year. It's because these kids got shafted last year.
Yeah,
they didn't deserve what happened to them. And I tried to continue to fight and hold them to a standard that was really unfair to them. But they deserve my best to get them where they're part of this conversation in March. Certainly guys who've been here several years,
mm-hmm.
Avery Anderson, Caleb Boone, but also the guys who came here last year and were told after the fact that they couldn't play in a tournament after transferring here. Tyreek Smith, Musa Cisse, Bryce Thompson. And so I'm really, really excited and really motivated to make sure that they get the best from our staff. But as I look at what we have returning, I feel we're really good that those guys will be capable of leading us where we want to go as well.
What most excites you about some of the development? I saw a workout recently where I saw Musa doing some things I don't think I'd seen him do before offensively.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot better. He's gotten a lot more confident in his ability on the offensive end. But that just comes from the kid puts a ton of time in it, and he's always seeking ways to improve. And so you'll see him probably extending his range some. He's still going to make his bread and butter down in the paint, specifically on the defensive end. But offensively, he's more mobile. He's a better decision maker. And, he's not going to shoot 5 threes in a game, I don't think, unless he's made the first 4. But he may shoot 1 or 2, and we'll feel good about it because he's really worked at extending that range. He's become a much better, more confident free throw shooter. But having the interior presence, this was the first time in my 19 years coaching that in the spring recruiting, I wasn't looking for a big man.
Wow.
It never happened. It's wow. Never happened before. But with those three guys, Musa, Caleb, and Tyreek Smith all returning, there wasn't a need for another guy because yep. There probably isn't enough opportunity there. And so do you want to bring a guy who's not going to play in and maybe unhappy or whatever? So we're very confident in those three guys to be able to hold things down in the paint for us, specifically on the defensive end. The two leading shot blockers and Tyreek Smith's not bad himself defensively, and then those guys all being better offensively. But then you got two really, really dynamic scorers returning as well, and Avery Anderson and Bryce Thompson. So pretty good core of guys to build on.
How can Bryce get better?
Just decision-making, being a more consistent three-point shooter, which means he's got to look for more opportunities to take his threes, especially on the catch. After we've put the defense in rotation and we swing it to him, he's got to be confident that he doesn't have to. The play's made, and now he's just got to be confident and use the time that he's put in the gym to shoot that ball confidently. And I think his percentages from three will raise, and then his ability to get to the free throw line and convert will be something that we'll need as well.
How much can Avery Anderson benefit from having guys like Caleb Asbury and John Michael Wright joining him in the backcourt, the meshing of those skill sets. How much can that help him?
Yeah, it's been the biggest part of the summer for our staff is putting blending those talents together and helping them understand how to play off of one another. They all really have, at one point or another, had to carry the load offensively. And now they got to understand that they need each other to take some of the load off of themselves. And so John Michael Wright, for example, he doesn't need to average 18 points a game for us. If he averages 8 to 12, be really good. If he can get other guys shots, if he can get Avery open shots, if Avery can get him open shots, he won't have to make as difficult of shots now, because he's not probably going to be at the top of a scouting report for the other team. And so there's a little bit of pressure off all of them because collectively they really complement each other skill-wise.
Is Caleb Boone's biggest chore, hey, get me 15, 20 pounds weight and strength on the body, and then let the chips fall where they may?
Yeah, to be honest, we've attacked his body a little bit more this summer. He's a naturally thin kid.
Sure.
So he's never going to be a big, bulky guy like Tyreek is. But the one thing, he's kind of probably a little bit different than what you thought. We've asked Caleb to extend his range and to really become more of a four, because we're going to try to find ways to play two of those three guys together more and be even more dynamic defensively, with now having a little bit less length on the perimeter, but not small, but just a little bit less length on the perimeter. If you get two guys who can protect the rim, you can really, really balance that out.
Makes sense. Non-conference schedule, what can you tell us?
Let's see. We've got a tournament in the Bahamas.
Yeah.
Santa Clara, Central Florida, and DePaul are the other three teams in a four-team event. We don't know our matchup yet. We're also going to play another game in New York City. We're going to go back and play Virginia Tech, an old friend of mine, Mike Young, at the Barclays in December. That'll be a great battle. They're going to be one of the better teams in the ACC this year. We've gotten our matchups for both of our challenge games. We're going to go to the Northeast and play UConn, who's going to be really good this year. And then we'll get Ole Miss at home in the SEC Challenge. So you got some really, really good, high-quality opponents here, both at home and on the road. And then we'll play Wichita State. We'll go to Oakland. Those are two games we got to return. It's the last game of a series with those guys. And then we're going to sprinkle in several home games as well throughout November, December, before we get into what, again, will be the toughest basketball conference in the country in the Big 12.
That's an impressive non-conference with some challenging games. We're looking forward to it. Coach, thanks so much for the time.
No problem. Thank you. I enjoyed it. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Once again, joined by Dr. Andrea Yilling, who is Assistant Professor of Environmental Soil Chemistry in the Department of Plant and Soil Sciences at Oklahoma State University. You mentioned consumers and sort of the connection to regenerative agriculture. So how's that being branded? How's regenerative ag being branded by the food companies as part of that consumer change, if you will?
So there is a lot of interest across many different companies, such as, you know, General Mills, Walmart. They're all investing a lot of money to support farmers and their kind of conversion over into regenerative agriculture. So I think General Mills has this plan to have 1 million acres under regenerative ag by 2030. Sorry. So there's just a lot of kind of high level interest in regenerative agriculture. And on the branding side, I think this is like a fast-changing, fast-evolving landscape. There are many, many different third-party companies that are creating regenerative ag certification programs. So I can't really identify which one's going to come out as the kind of leader, but it's definitely, I would look out in the next few years in your grocery store, you might start seeing, you know, regenerative ag certified. And that definitely will influence how consumers are making choices in the grocery store.
So for the wheat farmer who's listening to this today, what should be on their minds as we head down this path of regenerative agriculture? What things do they need to have sort of on a checklist or a watch list as they think about this?
Well, so I would consider that there will be potentially long-term benefits to kind of switching over to regenerative agriculture practices like cover crops or no-till, but it can take time. So I think that's one thing to keep in mind, is it can take time for kind of a soil to adapt and for the system to be able to start to kind of show these benefits. I think just having an open mind to it is what I would suggest. There's a lot of new programs coming out to support farmers to make this switch. So looking out for those, that's what I would suggest.
That's Dr. Andrea Yilling, Assistant Professor of Environmental Soil Chemistry in the Department of Plant and Soil Sciences at Oklahoma State University. More to come on the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield. Back to wrap things up on the Cowboys Summer Series, and we hope you enjoyed our visit with Coach Boynton. Before we go, a word about Butler's Gold. Butler's Gold is a brand new OSU wheat variety that's intended for late planting. Butler's Gold has a unique growth pattern where it can start late but sprint to the finish, with top-tier yield potential and high protein and test weight. Butler's Gold is named after OSU sprinter James Butler, who won the 1980 Olympic trials in the 200-meter dash. To learn more about Butler's Gold and all the OSU-developed wheat varieties, log on to okgenetics.com. Thanks for listening to the Cowboys Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics from Learfield.
On the Cowboys Sports Network from Learfield, this has been the Oklahoma Genetics Summer Series, brought to you by Oklahoma Genetics, bringing OSU's world-class wheat varieties to the farmers of the plains. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Cowboys Sports Network.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.